It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. I was contacted by a professor at University of Alaska Anchorage, who is also a public radio person, Elizabeth Arnold. And she'd had a student who did a radio piece about the fact that there are a bunch of young men in Anchorage who are seminarians. That is, they're learning to become Catholic priests. And I thought, wow, I didn't know about that. That's surprising. I wonder what it takes to do that and why in this day and age there would be more seminarians in Anchorage than ever before. So I listened to the piece that Elizabeth's student produced, and I decided, let's play that on Hometown Alaska and then get some of these seminarians in the studio to talk about their call, why they want to be priests and what it takes to do it and how that fits into being a young person in Alaska in 2016. And I have two guests in the studio who are on that path, Robert Whitley and Jake Brownlee. But first, we're going to hear that radio piece that Elizabeth's student produced. His name is Nolan Ainsworth. He studied journalism at UAA, a 2016 graduate. He's an intern at the Catholic Anchor, which is the Catholic newspaper here in town. And here's the piece he produced about the seminarians in Anchorage.
Radical changes in American society in the mid-20th century caused a drop in priestly vocations. According to the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate, or CARA, the number of ordinations to priesthood was cut in half from 1965 to 1985, from close to 1,000 to 500, where it has more or less remained to this day. This reflected larger social tensions in society at this time. Anchorage's Father Tom Lilly was coming of age in the 1970s. Like the rest of the country, the priesthood was nowhere near his radar as a young adult.
But you have to remember, our culture was going through the feminist liberation movement, the sexual revolution, the Vietnam era, post-era of distrust in government and Watergate and organized institutions. And then you had the whole psychobabble of the 60s and 70s of be all you could be and this extended adolescence that goes into the 20s and 30s now.
I met Father Lilly in his office at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Parish. He's dressed casually. Mass was celebrated earlier in the day. We talk about life in seminary and his path to the priesthood. He's the director of seminarians for Anchorage, and as such, has a lot to say on the subject.
Once a man is selected by our archbishop and sponsored as an archdiocesan seminarian, then I take care of guiding him through the next 4, 6, or 8 years, depending on how long he's in formation.
The Catholic Church defines vocations as a state of life God calls a person to. Formation is a preparation a candidate for priesthood undergoes at seminary. Future priests take classes in theology, philosophy, and church liturgy. In the morning and evening, they pray. Seminarians even spend time in the community volunteering at jails or schools. This teaches them how to relate to others and become better pastors. One of the pillars in the formation process is personal or human formation. Pope John Paul II called human formation, not spiritual or academic, as the basis of all priestly vocations. Here's Father Lilly.
We want a man who's well-formed personally, well-integrated in the various dimensions of his life. We want somebody who's not just a bookworm and can recite all the dogma. We want somebody who can hold the hand of somebody at their bedside in the hospital as they're dying, or hold the hand of their family member as their loved one is dying.
A number of resources is available to those who want to learn what it's like to become a priest, such as podcasts.
There's nothing on earth that compares to the Catholic priesthood. And today, priestly vocations are booming. Welcome to Vocation Boom Radio, the show that highlights the glory of the priesthood.
Earlier this spring, Vocations Boom journeyed to Alaska.
Archdiocese of Anchorage is also home to today's guest on Vocation Boom Radio. He is the director of vocations and pastor of St. Benedict Parish. He's Father Leo Walsh. Father Leo Walsh, thank you for joining us today and welcome to Vocation Boom Radio.
Well, hello, Nick. It's nice to be here.
Father Walsh talks about being raised in Anchorage and serving as a priest here. Towards the end of the conversation, he talks about what he does as the director of vocations for Anchorage. Before our first meeting, he sends me a 23-page packet with everything needed to know about becoming a priest in Anchorage. It includes spiritual qualities a candidate must have, like a deepening prayer life, but it also lists material ones, like having less than $40,000 in college debt. The application for priesthood has 13 items on it and includes everything from high school and college transcripts to two written essays. However, it's not academic or financial deficiencies that keep most men from becoming priests.
The biggest obstacle, I'll be honest with you, in the church today that most men that come to us are facing are their fathers.
This shouldn't be a surprise given what we know. The parents of a 20-year-old today were youth during the problematic years mentioned earlier.
Seems like in the 60s and 70s, we became very self-absorbed and what can I do and what is it's the, what they rightfully call, I think, the me generation. I don't think the present generation is like that, but their parents are not unaffected by that. And so the question that gets asked is indicative of that. When we were little kids, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? So the focus is on what I want, and it's a real consumerist kind of attitude. I have wants. I'm going to go where those wants can be met.
But Father Walsh goes even further. He says society was not the only one deaf to God's call. The church became complacent as well.
Tonight, more troubling revelations surface in the growing church sex abuse.
The harm and the suffering caused when some priests
ignored
took
the children and left them to just twist in the wind.
You know, and during that period, and all the studies show there was that one period where, you know, the screening of letting men in who enjoy that sacred trust was rather lax. And some guys get into the priesthood who never should have been in the priesthood.
This underscores the importance of a vocations director. In the past, there wasn't much of a need for a vocations director. Men began studying for the priesthood sometimes before they hit puberty. They started seminary in junior high or high school and continued all the way up to graduate school. Father Tom Lilly calls it the monastery model.
But the whole notion was, let us remove you from the world and that you're a very impressionable age, and we'll form you in the seminary, and then we'll put you back out into the world again. We've subsequently discovered, with the changes in our culture, that's just not a healthy way to form men. You don't take them away from their families and their communities when they're 13 or 14 and return them when they're 25 and then say, by the way, let's plop you back in the culture.
Today, there are 5 Anchorage men in seminary under Father Lilly and the Archbishop. They are not studying in a church bubble like years past, nor are they required to become priests once they get out. The last thing the church wants is men becoming priests who are not serious about the calling.
I'll use a line that Father Leo used with me many, many years ago. He said, if you're called to priesthood, then crawl over cut glass to get there. I add, if you're not called to priesthood, run quickly the opposite direction, because this life can be all-consuming, and if you're not called to it, then all you are is a busy, glorified social worker. If you are called to it, then be the icon of Christ for others.
It's been a long and gradual road for the church to amend its formation process for priests. The number of priests in the United States is still a shell of what it was 50 years ago. But despite all that, there are roughly 400 more graduate-level seminarians in the U.S. today than a decade ago, a 15% increase. It shouldn't be long before priestly ordinations also gets a boost. It was Pope John Paul II that said, "The future starts today, not tomorrow." And so it is with vocations to the priesthood.
And that was a report by Nolan Ainsworth, who is a UAA student and produced that as part of his UAA work, and is now going to be an intern with the Catholic Anchor. And in the studio with me now, I have two of these seminarians, Jake Brownlee, who is in his second year and is attending a school in St. Paul at St. John Vianney College?
Seminary.
And Robert Whitley, who is a deacon. He's in his last year at St. Paul Seminary. Thanks for being with us, both of you.
Thank you. Pleasure.
So, and we're going to be open to callers who want to get involved in the show as well, who have any point of view or questions. The phone number here is 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752, and the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Robert, tell us, when did you realize that this was your vocation or this is where you wanted to go? It sounds like you took a different path at first and you were a teacher, and how did you make this decision, or how did it become clear to you this is what you were going to do?
It was a long journey. Of course, I was an altar boy when I was a kid, and I really loved being up on the altar. I've been really blessed to know wonderful, just really holy priests throughout my life. I've been at the cathedral downtown Anchorage for many years, and we've always been blessed with wonderful priests there. So I'd say the example of good priests was the number one thing that pushed me, and really a love of the sacraments as well. Of course, like most kids, in high school there are other things on your mind, and in college too. It's hard to pinpoint an exact moment. It wasn't like a light switch or anything. But I went to Italy to study abroad when I was in college, and kind of got to see the church universal, the church and really how similar it is to the church everywhere else I'd ever been, and to feel at home so many thousands of miles away when I would go to the church and to the Vatican was really eye-opening experience.
You had at some point to make a pretty big decision, though, and say, it's an eight-year process in total, right? And you already had a couple of years in from your undergraduate work, but still many, many years of work and money and effort to get there. Mm-hmm. So at some point you had to sort of sit down and say, yeah, this is really how I want to spend my entire life.
Right, yeah. We had a SARA conference, which is for sponsoring vocations. We had one here in Anchorage, and the late Cardinal, Francis Cardinal George, the late Cardinal Archbishop of Chicago, was present, as well as some seminarians from the seminary that I'm currently at. And it was at his talk at this SARA conference. It had already been on my mind and my heart whether that was even a possibility. And the Lord, I believe the Lord spoke to me at that talk, and I said, I'm gonna apply for seminary, and so that was, if there was one moment that I could pinpoint that kind of pushed me over the edge, it would be that.
Did you have an issue like as Nolan was talking about in the piece of one of the people he interviewed, of like telling your family and having them say, gee, are you sure about that?
Well, my mother is a very devout Catholic. She raised us Catholic, and we had priests in our home all the time.
So she's probably pretty excited.
Very supportive and excited. My father, he's not Catholic, but he's very supportive. He's mm-hmm. always respected priests very much. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we've had him in my house growing up all the time. And my younger brother as well was an altar boy. And so, my family's very supportive and very happy, I would say.
Yeah. So, Jake, kind of the same questions for you. You're much closer to the beginning of the process, but you've launched on this 8-year process of schooling, which is pretty, it seems like it would be pretty daunting. And you went straight from high school into the seminary, unlike Robert, who went through school first and taught for a little while. What brought you to this decision?
Well, unlike Robert, I could not have hated church more growing up as a kid. I was notorious for crawling under the pews and trying to leave early. Always got in trouble and called out by the ushers and stuff and brought back to my seat. I just didn't like it, just hated it. I went all the Sunday school and stuff like that, and I really, really didn't see the point of it. I thought I was a good enough kid. I was bored to death. I was like, this is Sunday morning. I want to be home watching football, so I'm done. And I told my parents that I'm done going to church when I was in the sixth grade, and I remember that. Seems kind of like a dumb thing to say, but I was serious, and I was like, I'm 12 years old, I can make these decisions for myself, and I told my parents.
I think that's when a lot of people drop off from church, right?
Yeah.
It's when they sort of hit that puberty and sort of think for themselves a little bit and say,
exactly.
I'm not getting it.
Exactly, yeah. That young age where you think you know everything. So I stopped going, and shortly after that, my family stopped going as well. And,
that's probably pretty typical too, right? It's all about your kids for a lot of people.
Yep. If, one of them leaves and they start dwindling away, it's very much so a supportive thing to have your whole family there.
Yeah.
And so, going through school, I was like, sports are my thing. I'm playing sports. So I entered high school and started playing football and was really good at it and had a lot of success in that. And same with basketball and track.
What school?
And Chugiak High School.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started finding appreciation and love there. I started being recognized and valued in my athletic abilities. And through that, I thought I found love. You know, I had that. I had girlfriends, things like that. And so I have all these things that I should be happy for and proud of, and I wasn't happy. And I figured that out my sophomore year when I was just at probably one of the lower points in my life, and I was like, I've got nowhere else to turn. I've got nothing. I've tried everything, and I'm not happy. All my friends are happy. Why am I not happy? And one day I decided that I was going to go to Mass. I was going to try it. I had my brother drop me off because I couldn't drive yet. And I walked in.
All by yourself?
All by myself. Huh. Sat in the back, and the deacon, as Robert is now a deacon, was preaching that day. And he said that Jesus Christ loves you more than you could ever love yourself. And that was the first time I heard the message of the gospel. And from that, I just changed. And so I started going to church and praying more, doing my own research and saying, hey, you know, this Catholic church kind of has a lot of answers to a lot of things and a lot of things that I've been worrying about and wondering about. So,
and the Catholic Church is the church you were raised in?
Yes.
When you were younger?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And when I say raised, it was like went to church on Sunday, that's it. Didn't right. talk about any of that at home. But, you know, started taking it upon myself to learn more, to pray, to go to different classes and things. And through
were
that,
you just you're finding a sense of meaning and purpose.
Meaning, purpose, love, acceptance.
A community.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. But more so a relationship with God mm-hmm. And feeling His love. And then through that, I started feeling the call to priesthood, called to lay down my life for others, to give more of myself. And, you know, this is still contrasting with the worldly life I'm living. I didn't just drop everything there, you know.
Yeah.
And this is now my junior year of high school where I'm having to make these big decisions because, you know, I was just made prom king, homecoming king, things like that this year, captain of all these teams, and I'm like, I'm going to go play college football. That was what I wanted. That's what I wanted for my whole life. And that was, you know, what I thought. And I started getting letters in the mail and started, like, this is a real possibility. So my senior year rolls around, and I'm, you know, having a great year. First couple games were awesome. And I remember where, you know, in football you have, like, these things called chalk talk where you're talking about the plays and stuff.
Yeah.
I remember just sitting at the board looking at it and, like, what a waste of my time. Like, this is all fun and games, right? But I'm spending, like, 3 to 4 hours a day doing this. I could be helping people. I could be serving the community. I could be doing anything but this to serve my vainglory, you know, to make myself look better. And it was then that I decided I was going to say yes and to apply to seminary. So I called.
This must have seemed like totally bizarre to your friends
and yeah.
everybody around. Like,
we're getting there. We're getting there. So I hadn't told anybody this, right? Nobody knew I was wrestling with that.
Oh, wow.
I told my mom, and she just completely broke down in tears and cried and was like, you can't do it. I want grandkids. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to tell anybody. Forget I ever said it, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so, I don't think things through very well. I just kind of jump right into head situations, head first. And we had our senior night football game, which is like everybody shows up. It's your last game at home, big deal. And you do a little bio. The seniors do a bio, and they write, you know, what they liked about football, all this stuff. And the last question is what you're going to do future in life. And that's usually where people write where they're going to play college football or that they're going to play college football. And I decided I was going to write become a Catholic priest in Alaska. And that was the first time I told anybody,
wow.
except for my mom and, the rest of my family. And I'll never forget, like, you know, after they read that, just nobody could think about the game on my team anymore. They wanted to talk to me about this. And they were just like, that's the dumbest thing you've ever said, Jake. There's no way that's the thing. Like, it's happening, guys. Like, I've got the paperwork in my house and I'm working on it now. So
wow.
it was terrifying. But I was,
you're sure you're right.
Sorry?
You were sure you were right.
Yeah, I was sure that this was for me. I knew that this was what God wanted me to do. He wanted me to witness in front of my friends and family and the community of Chugiak. And then, you know, started working on the paperwork, which I think it was Nolan was talking about earlier. And it's a lot of work. It takes a long time. It took me about 3 months to complete all of it. And there's a lot more in there that he didn't really mention. And it's nerve-wracking going through that, being actually evaluated and having the prospect of someone say, no, you're not worthy for this.
Yeah.
You can't do this. Like, it's not that you didn't try hard enough. It's just we don't want you. And that was terrifying for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of kind of sleepless nights, like, man, I really hope I didn't just throw everything away, you know.
Because you're also trying to answer these questions honestly. And
yeah, yeah, exactly. And sometimes
part of this whole thing, right?
Sometimes you don't like the answers you have to write down on the paper. But, you know, praise God that I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
This has been – I just completed my second year at seminary, and I have – loved every second of it. It's hard. It's not easy, but it's the right thing for me to do.
I take it there's no football team at the seminary.
There actually is.
Oh, really?
And it's really amazing because one of the guys at St. John Vianney Seminary, his name is Jordan Roberts, he is the running back for the University of St. Thomas, and he was just named Division III Offensive Player of the Year as the running back. And he took their team to the finals, which unfortunately they lost. But yeah, and he's a seminarian as well. So
cool.
He lives right up the floor from me. So
really interesting. Cool. So many questions I want to ask, and really appreciate your openness in being here today to talk about this. Listeners, maybe you have some questions about young men making this decision, which seems like the last thing most of us would expect somebody to do these days. But apparently, more of them are doing it. There are now, I'm told, 6 or even 7 seminarians right here in Anchorage, which is the most there've ever been. If you'd like to call in and talk with us, the number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752, and the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, I mean, can't go too much farther without talking about celibacy and the lack of women in the priesthood, which both seem, in a way, incredibly anachronistic in America in 2016. And Robert, I mean, you're pretty far into this, and you're already a deacon. Can you, I mean, do these aspects of the priesthood make sense to you? I mean, is this something that's important to the priesthood?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And you know, the farther along you go, and the more you learn about the history and the traditions of the church and the theology the church, the more you come to appreciate the reason that we have these things in place. And Pope Francis, in his apostolic exhortation, Evangelii Gaudium, really beautifully, I think, talks about this, the topic specifically of an all-male priesthood. And what's amazing is that he doesn't make it about the dignity. You know, sort of like men have some different dignity or more dignity than women. He actually immediately takes it to the Blessed Virgin Mary and says, "Women, look, you have the Blessed Virgin Mary is a woman and really the greatest woman that the Church has ever had, and she in fact is the mother of our Lord." And so, it's not like most issues with employment or Title IX or things like that. It's not about having just an equal dignity. It's about the theology of the priesthood and the tradition and the fact that the priestess is called to be another Christ, and he chose men to do this and to follow him and to act in his name. And so we have, of course, a beautiful tradition of both male and female religious in the church, because men and women are both called equally to serve the Lord. But in different ways, because men and women are different. And so, it's really, I've really come to appreciate that.
I'm interested in how I was raised in a Protestant tradition. And so sort of the hierarchical aspect of the Roman Catholic Church is something I don't really necessarily know all that much about. But is there an aspect in which you really have to accept the teachings and you sort of like you, there's a certain level of obedience and believing in what is handed down from the Pope, mm-hmm. or you're really not doing your job, right? Or explain that, how that works.
Yeah, so authority and obedience are two things that certainly go hand in hand, because our Lord, of course, tells us that he's not going to leave us orphans. You know, he chose the apostles to remain with us, and of course gave the Holy Spirit to the Church to keep us in truth. And we believe as Catholics that the Holy Spirit is still with the Church. And so 2,000 years later, we have the successor of the apostles, the successor of Peter and Pope Francis, and the bishops being the successors of the other apostles. And so certainly we believe that their authority is directly from Christ, who is the truth. And therefore, our obedience to them is an obedience to Christ. And it's not a mere human obedience. It's not like, you know, just the military, yes, sir. It's really it's a very Christocentric obedience.
So is that something you have to make an adjustment for when you are entering the seminary and deciding, yes, I will be able to subjugate sort of my own opinion if I disagree to this point of view and these teachings?
Certainly, yeah. And in fact, in the ordination ceremony, which I just was blessed to go through on this past Friday, you lay prostrate on the ground, and that represents your death. It's one of the most powerful and beautiful parts of the ordination rite. And you really are, you're laying down your life to serve the Lord, and knowing that that's going to be in obedience to the rightful authority in the church and not to yourself. So you're no longer your own man. You're now a man for others. And your whole life has to be conformed to that model of Christ.
Wow. So, Jake, you sound like you were a somewhat impulsive person by nature.
Yes.
Was that a big step for you to decide that you were going to kind of push down that part of your personality, or at least be able to believe, apply the obedience of your views to the church?
So one of the most beautiful things that the church brings to the table, and this comes through one of the saints, St. Thomas Aquinas, he says that, faith cannot contradict reason, and reason cannot contradict our faith. So I take on faith what the church fathers say, because, as Robert says, it comes through the authority of Christ. And with that, all the stuff can be deduced through reason. And, I had issues with that. I actually did going into seminary. Some of the stuff I was like, we'll see. I see where you're coming from, why we have this.
Held back a little bit.
Yeah, but, I'll see where this is going. So I went to these classes and started doing philosophy, and I had no idea what philosophy even is. It's like, we'll see. I can leave. Well, not a big deal. Just 1 year of my life. And it completely changed the way I think and the way I process information. And through that, looking through all these logical arguments that, the fathers have put forth, I can see that what the church holds is truth, and it makes sense, that I have to give up a family, it makes sense, and that's what Christ wanted, and how can I not be okay with that if that's what he wants me to do? So just taking a lot of that stuff on faith, but also having that reason aspect in there is huge for me. It's huge.
So did Pope Francis and his sort of new attitude, I don't know how new, I mean, I hear different things in the media about how new are his ideas, or is it just a new way of presenting it? But it's certainly a different wind that's passing through, right? And it sort of caught people's attention. Did that influence you at all, that he was there and he was talking in a new way?
Yeah, what I really love about Pope Francis is he's just a lover. And that's what we need to see in a pope, is just out there loving the people. He meets people where they're at and doesn't push them to do things. And that was what I really loved, kind of reflecting the love of Christ, whereas, Christ goes and seeks the sinners out instead of, forcing them to do things. But it's really funny, a lot of things in the media say Pope Francis is changing things. He's changing the church. He hasn't changed anything. Hasn't changed a thing. He still holds the traditions of the church. And loves the traditions of the church. We love the church. So it's really cool to see that, every time something comes up where it's like, oh, the synod, he's going to change something. Something's going to change. Nothing changes. Nothing changes. Yeah.
Tell me what it's like. And this, if it's too personal, just say it's too personal, but to decide, I'm not going to be dating girls anymore. I'm not
sucks. It's as scary as you think it would be.
Yeah.
It's just as scary as you think it'd be. Especially at first in high school, when you got pretty girls all around you all the time, and then you graduate and there's even more pretty girls. So it's scary. And obviously having a family is one of the greatest gifts you can have. Having your own children, having a wife is beautiful. But realizing that Christ could have had those things and he didn't. Realizing that in the church's tradition, and even in ancient times, when a man would devote his service to his Lord, he would lay down everything, and that includes even his sexuality. And that's what the priest is called to do, is to lay down his, to be celibate. Robert just took his vow of celibacy Friday, which is crazy. And God willing, I'll be there one day, and I'll be taking that vow. And it's scary, yeah, but it's still a beautiful thing for me to lay down completely and fully everything I have in my life and give it over to the Lord. To know that I'll never have a child is scary. It's something you mourn over, really have to mourn and say, I accept this and I give this up and I give this to you, Lord. And it's hard, but It's what God has called me to, and trusting that He has my best interests in heart, I know that I will be happy.
All right. Well, so much more to talk about. We're only halfway through here, and I've got a million more questions, and you may too, or maybe you just want to lend some support or give your opinion. I'll be giving out those phone numbers after a brief break. It's Hometown Alaska. We're talking about the seminarians in Anchorage, the young men who are on their way to becoming Catholic priests in greater numbers than ever before. And with us today are Jake Brownlee, who is a second-year seminarian, and Robert Whitley, who's just been ordained a deacon and has one more year left before becoming a priest. My name is Charles Walforth. Stick with us as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back, Hometown Alaska, and we're talking today about the Catholic priesthood. We have two seminarians in the studio, young men who are on their way to becoming priests, and it turns out there's some six or seven who are on this path in Anchorage more than ever before, and nationally the numbers are going up, which could be a surprise from all we've read and heard about, but in the last half hour we've heard some reasons for that and expect to hear some more. And would be interested in hearing your comments and questions if you would like to weigh in or talk with our guests. The number here is 550-8433. It's 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we talked a little bit about this increase in the number of young men going into the priesthood, and I wonder, Robert, if you have any theory about why that might be happening. What's these horrendous sex scandals took place, and apologies were made, and maybe that's to you. Do you guys at your age, maybe that doesn't seem so present as it maybe does to, because a lot of that happened before you were really conscious of what was going on. It's a few years in the past now, but it affected us here in Alaska pretty severely. Mm-hmm. Do you think that we're just moving beyond that now, or do you have a thought for why there is increased interest in entering the priesthood?
That's a good question. There's been a lot of media coverage on that, and most of it actually happened before both of the two of us were even born.
Right. Just took a really long time to work through it.
Yeah, most of it was between, I believe, 1960 and 1980. Three or four. Mm-hmm. And there are probably a variety of reasons for that. However, now, of course, there's still a lot of pain and out there. And I think that our church leadership now is in a better place to look at some of the causes of this, to mostly really to look after the people who are affected by it, and also to prevent it from happening again in the future. And so we have a very vigorous, rigorous system in place that kind of is better at addressing these issues. There's lots of psychological evaluations that occur, for instance, now before one is even accepted to seminary.
This was that process that Jake was talking about, mm-hmm. of the many question surveys. Yeah.
So we all have psychological evaluations, usually more than one, from outside psychologists. And then during our course in seminary, most of the men will also have further meetings with psychologists. We have psychologists on staff at the seminary as well. And so I think there's just a better, like Nolan had mentioned in his piece, there are four pillars of formation, actually. Pastoral formation, intellectual formation, spiritual formation, and human formation. And that last pillar is so crucial, and really it's as a separate pillar, it's rather new. It's really under John Paul II, a great student of psychology and philosophy who really saw the importance to focus on a man's.
This is where he's talking about, you know, don't just grab kids out of middle school and start them on the road to priesthood, but wait until they're mm-hmm. more developed as a human being.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And see, you have to look into people's family situations, their relationships with others, with their fathers and parents, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Make sure that they're healthy to minister in the church.
Do you think it affects? I mean, it obviously affected the public perception of the Catholic Church and of priests in general, and I don't know if it may have affected the willingness of men to go into priesthood, but thinking that there was this taint had been put on it in the past. Mm-hmm. Is that something that ever concerned you?
You know, I think the way that our generation is responded to it, the reason it may be surprising is that whenever the church is, whenever we see a problem in the church, as Catholic men, we feel called to step up and to be part of the change. And so we see all the suffering in the world today, even in the church, and we want to be part of the solution, right? And, mm-hmm. and step forward and offer ourselves in service to turn that around. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that everybody, it seems, rightfully is was affected by it in some way. However, vocations are up, I think that's because we are at a far enough distance now to look at it a little bit more, maybe a little bit more objectively, mm-hmm. and also to respond in charity to the needs of the church today.
Yeah. Jake, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, if I could go back to why you think young men would want to join, because it's something Robert really touched on. I think, you know, especially for myself and, you know, my other brother seminarians that are my age, it's being called to something more, seeing a want and seeing hurt in the world, seeing issues and knowing you can make a difference, knowing that you have the gifts and the talents to make a difference, and wanting to live for something more than just a 9-to-5 job where you get a salary at the end of the week. Laying down your life is really a heroic thing that a lot of guys are moved by and touched by. And frankly, the priesthood failed a lot of people, and it hurt a lot of people, and it hurts to have to say that. And we want to see that changed. We want the priesthood to be what it was, what it can be, and what it should be. And that's through, submission to Christ and his will. Another thing is, you know, along with those screenings we have to go through, my psychological screening took about 6 hours. Wow. It was a massive interview, and I had to answer, this 600 question test, and it was like pulling teeth. It just took forever and was really boring, but, I'm thankful for those things. I'm thankful that, my brother and sister's kids won't be affected by a bad priest because mm-hmm. of things like that, yeah. by having those things. I also spent a year in visiting a psychologist when I was down in school, working through personal issues, and a lot of my brother seminarians do that as well. And just be assured that the church is doing everything it can to make sure this doesn't happen again, right. to prevent these things. We're very encouraged to visit a psychologist and to get the help we need. Just like how you would get help for a broken leg at an ER, you need help sometimes because you're either raised wrong or you have some issues you need to work through. So we're very much so encouraged to get the help we need.
Getting healthy yourself so you can counsel others is sort of, that's one of the first things that they teach psychologists, right? You know,
yes.
you need to be okay yourself.
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
So you were saying that you spend a lot of your time as a student. You're in this 8-year process,
yeah.
which is just still blowing my mind that it takes 8 years, but I get it. A lot of time with students who are not seminarians, who are just run-of-the-mill sort of college students, and I wonder if they see you, and if you ever have an experience of like you are sort of not the oddball, but you're sort of from a different world from them and have different set of concerns, maybe much more serious concerns than the typical college student who's just thinking about party Friday night and getting decent grades. Does that separate you a little bit from your friends and from people around you?
It really does because on our campus, you know, everybody has their dorms and stuff. And as a seminary, we have our own specific dorm where it's just seminarians living in. And you know, we have a dress code, so we have to dress nicely with a collared shirt, slacks, things like that, to go to class. And right off the bat, that alienates you from the rest of the college population because they're wearing whatever they want. So it's no guess as who's the seminarian in the class. So you're usually sitting up front with your big old glasses. No, it's not that bad. But it's obvious. And, you know, it's actually really funny that people want to talk to us. They want to ask questions like this. Why are you doing that? Why the heck would you came out of high school and you could do whatever you wanted. Why would you choose this? Why would you choose to what it seems like neglect yourself and neglect your happiness to try to do something that's seems outdated or foolish. And it's really awesome. It's a chance to make new friends that way and to evangelize and share, like I am now, why we do this.
Uh-huh. Well, let's go to a caller. Fran is calling from Anchorage. Fran?
Yeah, you know, I'm a lifelong Catholic, and I'm 70 years old, and I'm looking at a perspective from the guys that went into the seminary when these guys were their age and now. And I think one thing that I see in the new seminarians that I've gotten to talk with, and some of the new young priests, is, first of all, they were affected by a lot of the changes that John Paul II actually reorganized the church. We went through a crisis after the Vatican II Council, where some of the catechesis was weak and everything. And the young men going in now really have what many evangelicals would call a relationship with Christ, because they are choosing to go in to a profession that is sometimes looked down upon. And the young guys are really committed to what they're doing, and I think they're being screened correctly. But most importantly, they love the Lord, and I see that in church and in all their actions.
Yeah, thanks, Fran. That's a really good point. So in an earlier generation, maybe mom decided that this is the son that I want to be a priest and just sort of started grooming for whether that was really right for that person or not.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really, really true. And I just wanted to throw out one other idea. I was married to a man who was a very good Lutheran, and the Lutheran pastor once told me he was ordained later in life, and he wound up getting divorced, and he made one comment about being a celibate. He said that he discovered when he became a pastor that he could not both serve his wife and his God to the best of his congregation, and it caused a rift in his marriage, and they wound up getting divorced, and he stayed a Lutheran pastor. They let him stay. But he has since remarried, and he has stopped being a Lutheran pastor because he said he wanted to serve God in a different role, namely as a social worker, but he could not serve his wife and love his wife the way he could. And by these young men giving up their relationship with women, they are truly having not their individual family, but they are our fathers, and they are in a family, the church community.
Okay, good point, Fran. Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
It's Hometown Alaska. We're talking, obviously, about Catholic priesthood with two seminarians, young men who are on their way to becoming priests, Robert Whitley and Jake Brownlee. My name is Charles Wolforth. We welcome your calls. The number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So 8 years of school is a big endeavor expensive and a challenge. And I'm just curious if you feel like disclosing this information, how do you manage this? Maybe start with you, Robert. I mean, you already went through school, became a teacher, taught for a couple of years, then went back for, what, another 6 years? Mm-hmm. And you're not going to come out and be a doctor and make $500,000 a year.
That's right.
Although you do have job security, so that's a good part.
There you go. Yes, yeah. It's like Jake had mentioned earlier. It's different. It's a little different for the guys in major seminary, the guys who are doing their postgraduate work.
That's like being in graduate school.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're on the final stretch, as it were.
Yes. So graduate theology at the St. Paul Seminary. So my expenses are actually paid for by the Archdiocese and by the Catholic Extension Society. Whereas the guys who are still working on their bachelor's degrees, they're just their room and board is covered, and they have to pay for the rest. And it is very expensive, especially because we're at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota, which is an expensive school.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably about $50,000 a year for my education, including room and board and books and travel and all that.
So you expected to come back to Anchorage then, or what? What's the, is that sort of part of the deal?
Yes, that is. So you, what we have when you become a cleric, when you're incardinated, is the word, into the archdiocese here, which means it's sort of like being married to this particular church. And you're married to the church in general, but this is where you will do your work. And so we're sponsored by a particular diocese, in our case, Anchorage. There's also the Diocese of Juneau in southeast, and the Diocese of Fairbanks north of us, and they also have seminarians that they sponsor, that will serve there in those dioceses.
So are you signing up for a lifetime in Anchorage then, or is it the potential that you might move around the world and go to other places?
The plan for me is will be around Anchorage, so that this archdiocese covers, of course, the Valley, Palmer-Wasilla, Seward, all the way out to Dutch Harbor, Dillingham.
And about as north as Glen Allen.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's an expansive territory. We could be anywhere there in that area. Most of our parishes are centered around Anchorage or the Valley, so that's probably where I'll be. However,
is there currently a shortage of priests there?
Anchorage is doing all right in terms of our priests. We don't have many parishes, maybe less than 30 parishes, I would say, in the whole archdiocese, and about that many priests. So we're doing fairly well. But the Catholic Church, because it's universal and it's all over the world, I mean, in a certain sense, we could end up anywhere. Men are chosen for bishops, for instance. Archbishop Schweitz is from St. Paul, where we're studying, and he was chosen as Bishop of Duluth and then Archbishop of Anchorage. So that's one way. Hopefully neither of us will have to worry about that one, but that's one way you could end up anywhere.
Right, and you kind of do what you're told.
Yeah, that's right.
What about you, Jake? How are you managing your school expenses?
So I have the privilege of being able to work in the summers. I commercial fish, and I leave on Saturday. I commercial fish out of Igigik. And through that, I can acquire money so I can pay for most of my education. My parents do help as well, a fair amount. And it's something, it's a heavy cross that we have to bear. But money finds itself, it seems. Money's not anything to lose sleep over. It's money, it's nothing. It seems like a big deal, but I'm living for more than money. Yeah. And that's what's important. And if money's what it takes to get what the Lord wants me to do, that's what I'm going to give him.
So do you ever think about, you're very sure of yourself now, and I can sense that, but you're also young and you've got a long way to go. And it's possible that you change your mind, right?
Oh, yeah.
And will you be able to use this schooling for something else? Or has that ever crossed your mind? Maybe I'm on the wrong path.
It crosses my mind all the time. Mm-hmm. It's something that we all have to deal with. And that it's kind of the joke that we have is we're majoring in philosophy. So, when we leave seminary, we can discuss the best way to cook French fries at a fast food restaurant. So,
do you want fries with that? I can give you some arguments.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the joke we run. And it is scary. It's scary, but it's a beautiful thing because not only do I give everything, but I'm burning all my bridges behind as well. Uh-huh. I am committing to this. Now, I'm also majoring in Catholic studies. So I could, if I left, teach at a Catholic school or something like which would be amazing as well. I have some options like that, and like you said, I'm still young, so I could always go back to school and do something else and get a job somewhere, but it's not something I think about too much. I just try to give everything. I don't want to make any plans to let myself through. I burnt those bridges. I want them to stay burnt.
You're on the road. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's go to Terry, who's got a comment. Terry?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yes, I wanted to thank you for hosting these two gentlemen on your show, and also to show support for these gentlemen and for the Archdiocese.
Yeah,
we're
okay.
Very thrilled that we have so many seminarians and young men wanting for the priesthood. Also, I wanted to say congratulations to Robbie Whitney. We've known his family for many, many years and are so proud of him.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Okay, thanks, Terry. That's a good call. And I would just say I'm always looking for interesting ideas and things that I haven't heard about, and I don't think that listeners would have either. So when this came along, I thought, wow, I want to know more about that. And I was thrilled that these young men could be here.
Yeah, it's very exciting for the state of Alaska and the Archdiocese of Anchorage, these young men to put their lives forward for all of us and for the Lord.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
So I want to touch on your goals. I have a sense of what they might be, but when you're entering into this life of service, what do you hope to accomplish? I mean, by the time you retire, what would you like to see as being your life's work? And so I'll start with you, Robert.
All right, sure, yeah. So
it's a big question. Fortunately, nobody's asking me that.
Yeah. Well, the beautiful thing the priesthood is obviously in some ways it's like any other job. But, you know, as a specific vocation, sure, we'll retire from being pastors, from having the responsibility of a pastor at some point. But at the same time, we in some sense, we never retire because we're priests for eternity. And I have, for instance, I have a cousin in New York. He's 95 years old. He's a priest, Monsignor, and he's been a priest for 68 years, and he's still serving actively, even at 95. So that's, for me personally, that's one thing I'd look forward to, is just a life of service to the church, and it's in a beautiful vocation, a very fulfilling one. So.
And Jake, you mentioned this sort of sense of wanting to give to the world, and in addition to sort of your spiritual connection, what does that look like?
I want to reflect Christ's love in the world. I want to love people, and I want them to know that they're loved and that there's love out there. We live in a world that can seem really dark and gloomy, especially when you open the newspaper and look at what's going on. And I just want people to know that there's still good out there, that there's still love, and that. I just want to love people. I want to serve them and help them to realize that they are a loved child of God.
Oh, that's very inspiring. Rebecca from Wasilla, did you have a question or comment?
I do. So I'm curious about what their thoughts are regarding the constantly changing community and families, about bringing that old world church religion steeped in, I don't know what the term is, but bringing that forward into what we believe families and community and constantly evolving.
Yeah, no, it's a great question because our community is and our sort of social mores are changing so rapidly. You know, we now have gay marriage and obviously contraception is like virtually universally accepted, and yet that's not really accepted by the Catholic Church.
Right.
Those are some of the things you're thinking about?
Yeah.
Let's ask it this way: How do you keep what you're doing relevant in that world? Robert, do you want to take that one first?
Sure. Yeah. So it's a really good question. The church, there's a phrase, the ancient phrase that the church is ever ancient, ever new. And so while it's true that the church has been doing this for 2,000 years, we've been trying to help bring God's mercy to the world. We also understand that the world is changing constantly, and the situation. The family is very different today than it was, in the 50s, and certainly very different from what it was in the Roman world during the time of Christ. In fact, in a lot of ways, perhaps the family's experiencing the same things now, maybe more similar to what it was in the Roman world. And history, I think, has a way of repeating itself. As a classics major, I'm constantly reminded of that. So we, in one sense, we have this 2,000 years to look back and reflect on. But in the same sense, I mean, we're the men who are studying for the priesthood now. You know, we were born and raised in the 80s and 90s, and so we're, we are quite aware of all these changing situations. Probably the best thing the church has to say about the family is in Pope John Paul II, now Saint John Paul II's exhortation Familiaris Consortio on the family, and just a beautiful reflection because the family, although it has changed in some ways. Still, at its heart, it's a communion of love, a communion of love. And I think that if we can recognize that, we can see the beauty on all these families and what they're striving for and struggling with in the world today.
Interesting, Jake. It seems very relevant to you because you're talking about coming sort of right out of a high school world into what you're doing now.
Yeah. One thing that's important for me is that truth doesn't change. Truth is truth, and that's what we hold is the truth. We've held the same truths for 2,000 years as one of the largest and longest-running organizations in the world, and we've lasted through fire, persecutions, collapses, things that just happened in 2000 with these massive scandals, and we're still here, and we still believe in the same things, and we still believe in the same Lord. And that's inspiring for me, that we hold the same truths that we've held for our entire existence as a church. And that's just inspiring.
But how do you make that relevant to somebody who says, like, but that's not my world. You know, I'm living here and now, and things are changing.
I would say you show them. And, you know, there are people who, it may seem like a small population, but there still are people who believe that. I just came from ACYC, Alaska Catholic Youth Conference, and there are about 150, 175 kids from all over the state who believe in these things and are there and they're actively participating. They've given a week of their time to this. And, you know, the church is still the largest organization in the world. And we, with 1.2 billion people believing the same thing, it's still out there and people still believe in this, and showing people that these ideas aren't going to change and this is the way things are. This is truth. And, you know, obviously doing that with charity and just trying to meet people where they're at and explaining to them the reasons, the reason with the faith.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we just have about a minute left, and I wanted to each of you to sort of quickly say what's happening next. Robert, you're a deacon now, but you're headed back to school in the fall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have one more year left to go back and complete my studies, and then I'll be back home, hopefully permanently, as a priest. I'll be ordained on June 23rd. Of next year, God willing.
All right. And Jake, what's happening with you?
Next year will be my third year in seminary. I have the privilege of going to study in Rome starting in September. I was selected to do that, and I'm very excited to see what the Eternal City has to offer, to hopefully meet Pope Francis. If he's out there listening, hope to meet you someday.
Yeah, he's one of our regulars.
Yeah, yeah. Just very, very excited to leave the country. I've only been to, like, Canada and Mexico, so, yeah.
Great. Well, congratulations to both of you, and thanks to both of you for being so open. It's a really interesting conversation. Very much appreciated it. Robert Whitley, who's a deacon, one more year left before he's a priest. Jake Brownlee's in his second year of being a seminarian. They're both from here in Anchorage. Dave Waldron is our producer, put the show together and made it all sound good. Many thanks to Nolan Ainsworth, who produced the report you heard at the top of the hour. He's a UAA student, 2016 grad, and working now for the Catholic Anchor. My name is Charles Wolforth. That's all for Hometown Alaska. I will see you in the fall. You're going to be hearing Kathleen McCoy next week, and then we'll be on hiatus for the summer. So thanks very much for listening. That's all for today.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.